Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
A few months ago, before this whole pandemic started, I was visiting one of my friends at his place of work, and we got lunch together, and we talked about a whole host of topics. And one of the things we started talking about were disasters. Like, what would you do? What would we do, us and our families, if there was some kind of natural disaster, maybe an earthquake or a wildfire, or even something like civil unrest or disobedience, like riots or some kind of an extended blackout? So we talked about that. And what I said to him was, look, you want to be prepared. You don't want to be in the situation where the bad thing happens, the disaster happens, you're completely caught off guard, and you want to be prepared. You don't want to be the people where the disaster or the calamity hits all of a sudden, and then everyone's rushing to the store to try to get supplies, because you don't want to be one of those people, because they're all going to the store, it's going to be a madhouse. You want to be prepared beforehand. He said, yeah, you're totally right. And then fast forward here to the pandemic, specifically when our state initiated the lockdown back in March and said, and this was something that was totally taking people by surprise, when the governor gets on and says, we're doing a lockdown, you cannot leave your homes except for essential travel, non-essential businesses are closed. And at the time, we didn't even really know, like, well, what does that mean? Like, we're locked down, we can't leave our houses. Well, we better go to the store. What if we can't go back to the store? What if something happens? And so my wife, Laura, even said to me, Trent, you better go to the store. I said, oh, no, I am not going to the store. Right now, all the panicked people are going to the store, and I don't want to be a part of that panicked mob. And then that friend of mine, he called me and he said, well, I panicked and went to the store thinking maybe there was one last thing of toilet paper there, and it was a terrible idea, and I wish I hadn't done that. So today on Free for All Friday on the Council of Trent podcast, I want to talk about what to do when the poo hits the fan, what to do, how to be prepared. My wife is always saying, she says, the worst thing about this pandemic, aside from, in fact, the loss of life, the economic ruin, and the human suffering, my wife, Laura, tells me the worst thing is that preppers are vindicated, because she hates when I get really obsessed with prepping. And I attribute this to my parents. My parents are pretty big into being prepared for things, always, you know, hope for the best, prepare for the worst is what they would tell me. So I was kind of raised in that environment. So I developed a kind of prepper mentality, not like a super duper prepper. I don't have a bunker or something like that. I don't have, like, there's some preppers who have silos filled with like years worth of food and things like that. But I'm just one of the people, when I go in places, maybe it's just the pessimist in me, I'm not sure. But I think to myself, what would I do if the poo hit the fan, if things went totally wrong? And it's little things. Like, I'll go into buildings and say, what if this building caught on fire? What would I do? And you know me, in these previous podcast episodes, we haven't done one in a while. I'm going to do a disaster episode soon. I haven't done that in a really long time, so I was worried people were sick of them. So this is a little bit of a prepper disaster one, but anatomy of disasters, that's something I've always been fascinated by. I have a few episodes here on the podcast you can go back and check of what I've thought about natural disasters, human disasters. So what I do is I go in place, I think, what would I do if there was an active shooter? What would I do if there's a fire? What would I do if the grocery store ran out of food? What would I do if you called 911 and no one picked up on the other end of the line? And so as that kind of a prepper, for me, that's not kind of a weird, paranoid understanding of the world. It's just being prepared and hoping nothing bad happens. But if something bad does happen, you're ready to face it. And because you're ready to face it, you're ready to help other people who are not ready to face this thing. So a lot of people think about preppers like they're just like these selfish people who want to stockpile and hoard food and sit in their bunkers and wait for the apocalypse to end so they can reclaim the world. And there might be preppers, people in the quote-unquote prepper community who are like that, who are already, you know, were already kind of weird. I'd say prepping didn't make them weird. They were weird, and prepping was something that they got into. But for me, it's something that can actually be very generous in the service of charity to say, hey, if bad things happen, I am capable, or other people that I know would be capable, to be able to help, to lead, to not be caught up in the disaster as well. So that's just the mindset behind prepping. And I just want to talk just basic things for what you can do, that we've gotten back into a little bit of a new normal. I mean, we don't have as many like grocery shortages as we had had before. But I think this pandemic really showed people that we take things for granted in life. We take for granted that I can just go to church and go to daily mass. I can just show up at the store and not have to wait in a line. There were so many things we take for granted in our modern convenient-based society that can just be gone overnight that we don't even think about. So that's why it's important to simply be prepared for those things to be gone, whether it's from some kind of prolonged chronic emergency like a pandemic, or a more acute disaster that could be extremely fatal, like you're caught in a building fire, a ship sinking, an earthquake, or even something really far more grave, like a nuclear disaster or something like that. That's what I want to talk about today, is the idea of preparing for these kinds of things and being prepared as a normal thing we ought to do as rational human beings. So why is it important to be prepared? It's important to be prepared because when we as human beings are caught off guard in hazardous situations or dangerous situations, sometimes we freeze up. There's an article on theconversation.com called "Paralyzed with Fear: Why Do We Freeze When Frightened?" So I want to read a part of it to you. A genuinely overwhelming and paralyzing freeze response is thought to occur when neither fight nor flight is available to you. That is, you have been so overpowered, overwhelmed, or trapped, there is no option to either flee or fight. Given our evolutionary history, this probably occurred most often during hunting. The saber-toothed tiger has the better of you, and there's just no way out. So we do what a number of animals will. We play dead. In the case of a genuine freeze response, this is not a conscious decision. Our primitive brain takes over and immobilizes us. In doing so, it's hoped our predator will lose interest and wander off. So I think in a lot of situations, you think there's fight, flight, or freeze. And what are the different responses that people have? Now, I would say some of that is just your temperament and what kind of temperament that you have. Some people might have more of a freeze temperament. I will tell you, I have more of a fight temperament, that when I am shocked or surprised by something, I will raise up my arms in a defensive posture. So I remember once I came home. This was when we were living at our very first apartment. This was the apartment next door to the drug dealers and other degenerates in our old apartment complex building. I remember the lady who lived across the way and one floor down. I heard her shouting once, "I don't know why he called the police. She was on my property when I stabbed her." And I'm like, we need to move. But during the time they did live there, I came home once and I opened, you know, the big, thick security metal screen door. Then I opened the regular door to our apartment. This is before we had Matthew, before we had Thomas. And I opened the door to the apartment and I walk in and I saw Laura's car outside, but she wasn't there. And I was like, oh, Laura's not here. And I heard like a breath behind me. And I turned around and the door closed behind me. Someone was behind me, hiding behind the door. And I turn around, I throw all my power into my right shoulder, send my fist flying forward, and I stop my fist 1 inch in front of my wife's face. She thought it would be cute and funny if she hid behind the door when I got home and jumped out and said boo or surprised me. And I said, Laura, I almost just decked you right in the face. Don't do that to me. You know I have a fight response. So some people have fight. Some people have flight. They run away. So fight or flight can be good. And it just depends on the situation. Sometimes it's better to just get out of there. You don't, you know, be the macho man. Don't be the Randy Macho Man Savage. Anybody? Randy Macho Man? All right. Don't, you know, step into a Slim Jim. You don't want to be the macho man. The other one would be macho man. Don't be that guy who looks for a fight or stays in a fight unnecessarily. Because guess what? A lot of times you should just run and get the heck out of there. But a lot of people will freeze in dangerous situations or hazardous situations where they feel that they're in danger, sometimes in extreme danger. And it's a phenomenon that psychologists and others have studied for a long time, especially in disasters, like when there's a fire or an earthquake or a ship sinking, when it's like, you need to get out of here and people just won't move. And the reason I think for part of it is they never thought this could happen. Their brain has no protocol. So they just go through life thinking this ship is never going to sink. And when it starts sinking, their brain hits a dead end in their response flow, because this was never a possibility they entertained. They just, I can't respond to this because it's not within the programming, so to speak. This is a clip from a documentary I want to share with you on the sinking of the MS Estonia. So the MS Estonia was a cruise ferry. So it's a ferry that had a door at the front that would open up on the bow, and cars would drive in. People would get on the ferry and go across. And this was a disaster that took place September 28th, 1994 in the Baltic Sea. One of the worst maritime disasters of the 20th century. 852 lives were lost when the ship sank. And what happened was around one in the morning, people were hearing bangs on the front of the ship, and they didn't know what it was. There was pretty heavy seas that they were going through. And so the crew checked the front visor to make sure that it was all right, you know, the bow door. All they had, though, was an indicator light, and they didn't send anyone to actually go look at it. It turned out the whole thing had just fallen off, and they didn't realize. So water was going into the car deck of this cruise ferry, and suddenly it started listing. It had a heavy starboard list. It tilted about 15 degrees. By 1:30 in the morning, the ship had rolled 60 degrees. And then at 1:50, it was at 90 degrees. So it was flat in the water and it was capsizing. And this all took place very quickly. I mean, in the span of a half hour, it had gone to 60 degrees. So at 1:20, so 1:15, the ship is listing at 15 degrees. 15 degrees is like the maximum list you want to have on a cruise ship. It's that's scary when you're on it and it's even listing that much, but it's still recoverable. At 1:20, all the people knew there was a quiet voice that said, Haide, Haide, Laivel, and Haire, which is Estonian for alarm, alarm, is alarm on the ship. And then it was people that were told to evacuate. And people were trying to get out of this ship, and they're climbing up the stairwells. And as the ship is listing, the hallways turn into like slides, like vertical chutes. This is a clip from Zero Hour, which talks about the sinking of the Estonia. It interviews one of the passengers who survived. He survived, and his girlfriend or fiance, whoever she was, I forget if it was his girlfriend or fiance, his romantic partner and his family did not, because they froze. They couldn't respond. So here's a clip from that, him recounting what happened.
Magnus and Michael Oon struggled their way upwards towards the open deck.
So I go up to deck 5, and then I recognize that my parents and girlfriend was not with me. So I go down to deck 4 again, and then stands on the other side on the hold.
Like many, Magnus's family become paralyzed by the situation around them.
My father, he don't say anything, and my mother was, she just stand there, and my girlfriend was in shock. So my mother told me, run, you, save you.
And that's common in these situations, that some people, they'll just freeze. They'll go catatonic. They won't be able to respond, because it never really occurred to them that it could happen. And now, I don't think that this guy was like some kind of prepper like I am, and that's why he survived, but you never know with people how they'll respond in these situations. Whatever it may, whether it's an acute disaster or it's a more of a chronic problem we're dealing with, like shortages in grocery stores or a blackout or whatever it may be, the key to prepping is just when you're in a time of peace, when things are going well, to ask yourself, well, what would I do if things did not go well? And to plan that out in one's mind to say, okay, here's what I am going to do if this emergency befalls me. And that's what you have in a lot of situations in disasters, that things turn out well for like emergency personnel or like crew members on ships or trains or in hotels or wherever it is. When there is a disaster, people who have trained and rigorously gone through, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. You want it to kick in for you. You want it to kick in for you like a reflex. Because if you're thinking it up as you go along and you're in a stressful disaster panic situation, the human brain does not think well under panic. We can't think creatively when we're panicking. It's difficult. Though what we can do is access things that we have planned out and practiced. For example, when I went on the Catholic Answers Alaska cruise way back when I started with Catholic Answers, I think that was like 2014, a few years after I started. I remember in my stateroom, I practiced before I went to bed. I turned out all the lights in the room. I got out of my bed, put on my pants, put on a jacket, put on a life jacket, put on a headlamp I had brought with me, and then went to the door. I could suit up out of my pajamas, get into a jacket, jeans, a life jacket, have a flashlight on, be at the door probably in about 15 or 20 seconds. Why? Because I was worried, what if I wake up in the middle of the night and there is alarm, alarm, evacuate, and the ship is starting to list and I hear these bangs? I don't want to be thinking, what's going on? What do I do? It's just, okay, get up. Pants, jacket, life jacket, hat, go out, turn right, go down the hall, turn right, up two steps, turn right, out to muster station, and be able to do that in the dark when it arrives. Now, I haven't been on a cruise in a while, and given the pandemic and COVID-19, I don't know when they're going to be doing cruises in the future. So, okay, so here's just some examples of that. Questions you can ask yourself when you're done listening to this podcast, questions you should ask yourself, and then have a plan to respond. What would I do if the gas station didn't have gas? If you're an older listener, you might remember the gas lines of the 1970s when there were gas shortages and people, you could only go to the gas station on a certain day based on whether your license plate ended in an odd or even number. What would you do if suddenly there's a disaster and the gas station doesn't have gas? There's no power. They can't pump gas, or the gas stations are overwhelmed by people. Well, what you want to do then is to keep your tank always more than half full. Like, at least, at the very least, if you have more than half a tank of gas, it can get you somewhere or it can get you around. It's better to have a half a tank than running on fumes or vapors. And by the way, you shouldn't let your gas tank get below a quarter of a tank anyways, because if your gas tank, if the fuel light is coming on, that's really bad for your car, because the fuel pump that moves the gas out of the tank, it is cooled by gasoline in the tank. So that pump is more likely to overheat if the gas tank is near empty, like if the low fuel light comes on. So do yourself a favor. Just keep your tank at a half. If you have two cars at home, most American families have two vehicles. If each of them has a half tank of gas, you could keep a rubber hose at home. In an emergency, you could siphon the gas from one tank, put it into the other tank, and then you could have a full tank, or you could siphon it and put it into a red gas can and be able to move from there. All right, what's the next one? What do I do if the stores didn't have food? I remember I talked about this with Laura over a year ago. I'm like, we need to have some backup food. What if you go to the store, there's a disaster, the shelves will be bare. And she's like, that's not going to happen. And then here's the pandemic. You go in there. When it first started, it was a surreal feeling. Even for me, who was a prepper, I felt nervous and anxious going through the grocery store, seeing no canned food, no pasta. It is a nerve-wracking feeling to see. So that's why it's good to have backup food that you can preserve for a long time. So canned food, rice, peanut butter, things that, especially things you don't have to cook as much. So rice usually have to boil like in a pot or something like that to be able to cook it, or maybe in the microwave. But especially things you can eat straight out of a can. Pork and beans, high caloric vegetables, you can get canned meats. There are a lot of, if you need, want something else to go along with it, like a soup or almond milk is a great thing to be able to keep on a shelf. So you want to get things that are preserved that can last a long time. The most ideal thing would be a food bucket. So freeze-dried food that you can cook easily and you have in several buckets that could last you months. Now, because of the pandemic, I think most of the stores that are selling those food buckets, they're back ordered probably till like the end of the summer. But it wouldn't hurt to, put an order now if you want to just have that. Eventually you'll get it and you'll have it. And you should think to yourself, would I be able to have enough food to be able to stay home for a month? If you have enough food at home in a pantry to be able to stay home for a month, you'll be doing a lot better than other people, especially if a cataclysmic disaster hits, like a flood or a hurricane, services go down, stores are not open. I mean, think about Hurricane Katrina. There's people, the hurricane hit, and they were stuck there for days or weeks, cut off from other people and not able to get to a store, not able to go anywhere. So to be prepared, like if you can make it for a month at your house, you'd be doing all right. Now, don't bankrupt yourself going out and buying a ton of food all at once. You might say, well, yeah, I can't do that. I can't afford all that extra food. Just buy a few extra cans of food and be sure to have can openers, multiple can openers, by the way, in different places, so you don't have cans of food you're unable to open. So buy that stuff. Just get a few extra cans and a few extra things each trip to the grocery store. And then in 3 months, you will have a supply put forward. And then keep track of it. Put right in your phone when the food expires. So let's say there's 2 months left when the food expires. Donate the food to a local food bank that could use it right now before it expires so it doesn't go bad. And then you can always think of it as a kind of tithe. So if you have money that you're already going to donate to charity, you could use that money to, not all of it, I would say, but you could use some of that. For example, you have money you would normally donate to charity, buy food to be able to keep as an emergency supply. And then in 8 to 10 months or before it expires, donate it to a food bank or another kind of charitable organization. So I'll tell you one group of people you can learn from when it comes to being prepared to help others, and that's Mormons. Mormons that I've known, and you read about it online, a lot of them are very big into being prepared, to being self-sufficient. Part of that's Mormon history. I mean, Mormons have always been driven from one place to another. They've been subject to various acts of violence and persecution. So that's why they headed out west to Utah in the first place. So they've always tried to be self-sufficient in that regard. So they've inherited a tradition of being very prepared when these kinds of things happen. So something to learn for. In fact, Ted Koppel over at CBS mentioned them a few years ago. They were doing a story about what would happen if the electrical grid went out from a cyber threat or an electromagnetic pulse weapon. What would you do? The power's out. And he talks about that. And then the group of people who are most prepared for these things.
New York State has several million MREs, meals ready to eat. But when you take several million and you divide it by 8 million, you're talking about maybe a 2 or 3 day food supply. Mm. What happens on day four?
Yeah.
What happens
on day four? Who in this country is prepared?
Yeah.
The Mormons are prepared. I spent 3 days out in Salt Lake City with leaders of the Mormon Church, and they showed me everything. Well, I don't know if they showed me everything they got, but they showed me a great deal. They are extraordinarily well prepared, not for a cyber attack. Mormons, after all, are people who have been driven from pillar to post for 200 years in this country. They have made a culture of preparing for disaster.
So there you have it. One thing we can learn from our Mormon friends. All right, here's a few other examples. What would I do if the water stopped coming out of the pipes? You know, you think like, Trent, that's never going to happen. Well, did you ever think you would be locked at home for a month? And the grocery store shelves would be bare and the toilet paper would be gone for 4 to 6 weeks? Some places it's still gone. So don't say that's never going to happen. You could say the odds of that happening are low. I'm sure that some disasters and calamities, the odds of a bad thing happening are low, sometimes remote, but it's still worth preparing for as long as the preparation doesn't take a heavier toll on you than the disaster itself. So yeah, don't bankrupt your family buying a ton of emergency supplies or something like that. It's easy if you get obsessed with prepping to create a disaster out of nothing as you're trying to prep, but just have simple steps you can take forward. So for example, what would I do if the water stopped coming out of the pipes? One thing you can buy online is a water bag or a water ballast. If you know, let's say there's an earthquake or something and you realize, hey, there's a problem here, the water's not coming out, you should keep bottled water on hand enough to last you. I mean, at least a week. I mean, a month would be great if you have that. But a good rule of thumb is 1 gallon per person per day to be able to use for drinking, for cooking, for cleaning. Now, of course, if you have a family, like let's say you have like 5 people in your family, a month's worth of water would be 150 gallons of water. I mean, you would need like 3 55-gallon drums just to be able to store it. And when you store it in a really large drum, it's liable to go bad or to have contaminants come into it after a while. So I would just say bottled water, enough to last you a week. Just having bottled water around is something worthwhile to do. And most families, I think, can go and get that to be able to keep that shrink wrapped. The other thing you'll want to keep around is just supplies to be able to purify water. So remember, you can always boil water if you have the ability to start a fire. I'll talk about this when I talk about the bug out bag, small things you can take with you to purify water. But one thing that can help you, I mentioned earlier, is a water ballast or a water bag. You plug this into the faucet on your bathtub and it can fill up and hold usually about, I think, like 60 gallons or 100 gallons of water, usually like 50 or 60 gallons of water. You could fill up your bathtub with it. You seal it off and it has a straw coming out of it that you can use for drinking water and things like that. You don't want to just fill up your bathtub and keep going back to that for water because it's going to get gross and disgusting after a while and possibly contaminated. So you're not going to want to do that. I mean, in a pinch, you could always get the water out of your hot water heater. Or if you really needed something to drink, you could get the water out of the top part of the tank of the toilet. Not in the toilet bowl. Don't do that. It's not worth getting sick over. But the water at the top part of the tank is actually clean to drink. So if you have this water, bottles of water, water ballast, tanks at home, then what you need to do is you need to ration it. The most important thing is drinking, to have enough drinking water. You'll also want to eat food. Like your canned food can give you water. So if you have like canned peaches, canned corn, a lot of these canned foods are soaked in juices that will have water to keep you going. But you use the water first for drinking, and then after that, you could use water for like basic things like cooking or cleaning. So let's say then after that, you use water maybe to cook in a pot, or you use water with a sponge to clean yourself in a shower, because you don't want to be dirty. It's bad for morale, and you're more likely to get sick or infected if you're just like absolutely filthy. So using like a sponge, you could take some of your extra water, bathe yourself with it. Cover the drain in the shower, though, because you'll have gray water that will come off of that. So you take like the leftover water from cooking, the leftover water from cleaning, and what do you do with that water? Pour it back into the toilet, pour it back into the top of the tank, because your toilet works on gravity. It uses pumps to get the water in, but to send the water out, that's just gravity, baby. So if you've got extra dirty water around that's not suitable for drinking or cooking, just take it and you pour it back into the toilet bowl, into the top of the tank, or into the bowl itself. And then you'll be set to still have your plumbing work, because then the water will gravity drain away from you and you should be doing just fine. What would I do if the gas or the electricity goes out? Having backup solar chargers, you can get these on Amazon to be able to at least charge your phone, to be able to have small electrical appliances to charge. When it comes to gas, having a little grill, just having a little portable grill outside, even if it's not the nicest grill, that and a few propane tanks, that can go a long way. Just don't keep the propane tanks all stacked up in your bedroom or inside. You're not supposed to store propane like that. Propane is naturally scented, so you'll know if there's a problem with it. That was my best trying to do Hank Hill from King of the Hill. Bobby, how can you fail English? You speak English. Hank Hill, of course, sold propane on the show King of the Hill. Pretty decent show back in the day. Last one. What would I do if 911, I call 911 and it's just a click on the end? There's nobody on the other end of the line. Well, if that's the case, make sure you have first aid supplies at home. You'll want to make sure you cover, obviously, the basics, food, water, shelter. But in emergencies, the one thing you don't want is to get sick. You don't want to get a cut that's infected if you're going through wreckage or trying to get out of an area. You don't want to have to go to the hospital with other people, especially if the hospitals aren't open or inaccessible. Keeping a standard first aid kit around will go a long way, as well as keeping other over-the-counter medications and prescription medications if you require them. So that's just the basic preparatory supplies you should have in your home. When there's a disaster, usually you can stay in your home. You have time to think. You want to think it through. What are we going to do? Do an inventory of supplies and then go from there. But sometimes a disaster will force you to flee from your home. Maybe there's a wildfire that's approaching, or there's civil unrest, a civil disturbance, there's a hurricane, a tsunami, who knows what it could be, or it just could be your house just caught on fire, and you got to get out of the house, you got to go. If it's your house on fire, you just got to get out of the house and then call 911 and pick up the pieces. If it's the whole community is on fire, you got to get out of the house and you got to get going. So that's where you would need a bug out bag and a whoosh bag. Whoosh bag is W-U-S-H, whoosh, wake up, stuff's happening. Or wake up, poo's happening. This is a small bag, and I got this from an online prepping website, but basically the whoosh bag is a small bag you keep under your bed, and you can grab it, you can put it on your back, or you put it around your neck, you grab it, and you're out of the house in a few minutes. What would you grab if you only had a few minutes? You have to get your children, your spouse, you got to get out of the house now. It's on fire, the bombs are dropping, you've got to get out of the house right now. You have your whoosh bag under the bed, you grab it, and what would be in there? You want to have your wallet, your phone fully charged, a spare charger. I found chargers online on Amazon for like $12. One that I like is called the PowerAd Slim 2. It's small. It can fit in your pocket. And make sure you also have a cable to go with the charger. That one is small and it can charge your cell phone 2 times. So you're running out. You want to have your wallet, phone, a charger, a hard drive or a thumb drive with backup copies of your important documents, family photos. Backing up family photos and memories are so important. In a lot of disasters, people will say the one thing they regret not having is that anything in a home can be replaced. You can get a new couch, you can get a new rug, you can replace a lot of things in a home that get destroyed. Family photos and memories, though, is very, you know, it's hard to replace those, especially if they're pictures, they're not backed up in any digital way. So backing those up. Spare car and house keys. You don't want to run out of the house and suddenly you can't start your car or lock your house or get back in the house. You can't start your car if your car keys are inside and the house is burning down. You want all of that in one place. Cash, a mixture of small and larger bills in case you're leaving and it's a larger calamity and there's no electric grid, debit cards or credit cards don't work. Cash will still be king in these scenarios. You can still use that in places to buy things or get stuff that you need if power's not working. Your necessary medication, if there's medication you absolutely need, prescription medication, keep that near you in a bag so you can grab and just go, including your eyeglasses. And you might also want to include in this small kit. You don't want this kit to be big. This isn't a whole backpack full of stuff. It's just the one thing you can grab if there's a calamity and you can't even get to the emergency kit. Well, at least you have this. You've got something to work with here. You got a wallet, phone, your precious memories, keys to your car, cash, medication. Hopefully you can go from there to rebuild and figure out a plan B. Another thing when it comes to being a prepper, prepare and then make the plan, throw the plan right out the window, as Captain Cold would say on DC's Legends of Tomorrow's Legends of Tomorrow. Well, that was a Flash crossover event. Sometimes things, you know, just don't go your way. So the last thing in the pack might be a small flashlight, one that's rechargeable. You can just crank it and it turns on, because especially a lot of times if you're running out of your house, usually at night you're doing that. So having a light is key to be able to do that. And usually I would say in an emergency, you'll want to hunker down at home. That's what most people will do. But if you have to absolutely leave, you got to get out of Dodge, you'll want a bug out bag. You can go online and search bug out bag. Some of it can be overwhelming. Like, they've got like 100 things to put in your bug out bag. You don't want to do that. You don't want to have a bag that weighs like 50 pounds or 60 pounds that you carry in an emergency. You have to just get going, get to safety, get to a rural area, or go somewhere else. I recommend what you can do is keep the contents of a bug out bag in the trunk of your car, and with a backpack to go along with it. So if you have to just get out of Dodge for something that's happened, like I said, a wildfire, nuclear, biological, chemical attack, you know, whatever, there's some kind of calamity like that. If you have to just get in the car and go, you want to have that already in your car, hop in, and you've already got at least a half a tank of gas, so you can at least get somewhere, get 150 miles away to get somewhere. And with that, you want to have the basic elements of survival. And what do you need? You need shelter, food, water are the most important things. So when it comes to water, you'll want to have a hard water bottle. You should keep just spare flats of water in your car anyways. Like, just keep a flat of water in your car, and that could last you and your family a few days. Just be sure not to go through it, because it's always like, can somebody throw me a bottle of water from the back? It's tempting to do that. So you want to, I would say, keep two flats there. And then as one gets empty, buy one to replace it. So you always have at least one flat of water. But you shouldn't rely on that. What if you can't carry it with you? Water is heavy. If you have to leave your vehicle and you have to hike somewhere, water's a heavy thing to carry. You'll want a hard water bottle that you can fill up with water and get it from a purified source. Don't just drink from some random mountain spring. You don't want to get Giardia and get sick. But you can, if you can purify the water, go ahead. A Life Straw is a great tool. You can use, look up Life Straw. It has a built-in filter, and you can use it to drink from things like a stream, for example, and it'll filter out these impurities and bacteria and other things like that. Another thing would be protein bars, just quick, dirty stuff to eat, like high caloric protein bars that you can eat that don't make you super thirsty, but can give you the calories you need. You should be more concerned about water than food. You can go 3 weeks without food. You can only go about 3 days without water. So if I had to err, I'd make sure I'm hydrated more than fed, but protein bars are a great way. Have a can opener in there. Even if you don't have cans of food, as you go out and you're trying to stockpile food in this situation, you only have a bag, you may come across cans of food. Maybe a food bank will give you a can of food. You'll want to have a can opener with you. That's a hard thing to replace. I've seen survival gurus be like, oh, you can open a canned food without a can opener, just with a knife. And I'm like, I would probably stab myself. Other things you'll want then is being able to cook, like a collapsible cooking pot. Clothing, keeping spare clothing in your car. This is nice for an emergency, or nice if the kids just didn't make it to the bathroom. Or we decided to go to the beach or the pool, and the kids just jumped in and got wet anyways. And they said, don't you get wet, it's gonna be a miserable ride home. And you don't want to be miserable. So keeping spare clothes to dress in layers, and emergency ponchos, because, you know, you want food, water, shelter. Part of shelter is just a place to sleep for the night. So a tent and a sleeping bag are great to keep around. A small pop-up tent or portable tent to keep in your bag would be a very good thing to have. As well as kind of shelter and clothing. Like, let's say you have to walk somewhere and it starts raining. You don't want to get wet. You don't want to get hypothermia. An emergency poncho, very, very small. You want things that are small, like a small emergency blanket, small emergency poncho, keep you dry, keep you warm, something that doesn't take a lot of space. And of course, also to stay warm, something to make a fire, including multiple ways to start a fire. Matches, a flint to strike, and keep toilet paper. One for, you know, taking care of business. So for taking care of business, and then you can use a little bit of toilet paper as tinder to start a fire. You can't use all the toilet paper, mind you, just a little on wood to get a fire going. Final things would be small bag of toiletries, you know, just for comfort and cleanliness, small first aid kit, a multi-tool that has a knife, pliers in it, very helpful when setting up shelters or trying to get through areas, a crank flashlight that you hand crank to charge it. There's also lanterns use LED that are solar powered that could be helpful. A hand crank radio that you can turn to NOAA or AM to try to figure out what's going on. You can stay in communication to know what's happening. Adapters, so a lot of hand crank weather radios. You can also get a little bit of a charge out of them to charge a phone, but you'll probably want to keep your chargeable batteries with you. Solar charger's nice, but that, of course, is a luxury for a lot of people. And then a weapon. I mean, this is up to you. It's a personal choice, but I would say something to protect yourself. When law and order fails in a disaster situation, I remember reading about people in Hurricane Katrina. They slept with knives, butcher knives, under their pillows because there were roving gangs that were looting. And there was no police, no 911. You'll want something to protect yourself. Only you can decide what is most appropriate for you to do that, but a means to protect yourself, I think, would be an appropriate thing to have in a bug-out bag or a bug-out box you keep in your vehicle. So that covers the basics of our prepping. Maybe I'll return to this in a future episode for what to do in extreme disasters or things that may come upon us. Because once again, we want to be prepped. God said, love your neighbor as yourself. So we got to love ourselves, take care of ourselves. And when we have taken care of ourselves, we're in a great position to take care of other people as well in difficult times. And I hope that you're doing that, especially in these difficult times we're going through now. I'm praying for you guys. Pray for me. And let's continue to bear one another's burdens, as St. Paul says in Galatians 6:2, and just be there for one another and just to pray for an end to the pandemic, return of public worship, and just pray that God's will is always done. So thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.